The Hound of the Baskervilles by Sir Arthur Conan Doyle.
Well, Watson, what do you make of it?
How did you know what I was doing, Holmes? I believe you have eyes in the back of your head.
I have at least a well-polished, silver-plated coffee pot in front of me. But tell me, Watson, what do you make of our visitor, Stick? Since we have been so unfortunate as to miss him and have no notion of his errand, this accidental souvenir becomes of importance. Let me hear you reconstruct the man by an examination of it.
Well, the engraving reads, "To James Mortimer, M.R.C.S., from his friends of the CCH. I think that Dr. Mortimer is a successful elderly medical man, well esteemed, since those who know him give him this mark of their appreciation."
Good. Excellent.
I think also that the probability is in favor of his being a country practitioner who does a great deal of his visiting on foot.
Why so?
Because this Stick, though originally a very handsome one, has been so knocked about that I can hardly imagine a town practitioner carrying it.
Perfectly sound.
And then again, there is the Friends of the CCH. I should guess that to be the something hunt, the local hunt, to whose members he has possibly given some surgical assistance and which has made him a small presentation in return.
Really, Watson, you excel yourself. I confess, my dear fellow, that I am very much in your debt. But let me take another look. Interesting, though elementary.
Has anything escaped me? I trust that there is nothing of consequence which I have overlooked.
I'm afraid, my dear Watson, that most of your conclusions were erroneous. Not that you are entirely wrong in this instance. The man is certainly a country practitioner, and he walks a good deal.
Well, then I was right.
To that extent.
But that was all?
No, my dear Watson, not all. By no means all. I would suggest, for example, that a presentation to a doctor is more likely to come from a hospital than from a hunt. And that when the initials CC are placed before that hospital, the words Charing Cross very naturally suggest themselves?
Well, you may be right. Well, then, supposing that CCH does stand for Charing Cross Hospital, what further inferences may we draw?
Look at it in this light. On what occasion would it be most probable that such a presentation would be made? Obviously, at the moment when Dr. Mortimer withdrew from the service of the hospital in order to start in practice for himself.
It certainly seems probable.
Now, you will observe that he could not have been on the staff of the hospital, since only a man well established in a London practice could hold such a position, and such a one would not drift into the country. What was he then? If he was in the hospital and yet not on the staff, he could only have been a house surgeon or a house physician, little more than a senior student. And he left 5 years ago. The date is on the stick. So, your grave, middle-aged family practitioner vanishes into thin air, my dear Watson, and there emerges a young fellow, under 30, amiable, unambitious, absent-minded, and the possessor of a favourite dog, which I should describe roughly as being larger than a terrier and smaller than a mastiff.
Oh, Holmes, really. As to the latter part, I have no means of checking you, but the medical directory should furnish us with a few particulars about the man's age and professional career. Let me see. Mortimer Charles. Mortimer Edward. Here we are. Mortimer James, M.R.C.S. Grimpen, Dartmoor, Devon. House surgeon at Charing Cross Hospital. Author of Some Freaks of Atavism. Lancet, 1882. Medical officer for the parishes of Grimpen, Thorsley and High Barrow.
It is my experience that it is only an amiable man in this world who receives testimonials, only an unambitious one who abandons a London career for the country, and only an absent-minded one who leaves his stick and not his visiting card after waiting an hour in your room.
And the dog?
Has been in the habit of carrying this stick behind his master. Being a heavy stick, the dog has held it tightly by the middle, and the marks of his teeth are very plainly visible. It may have been... Yes, by Jove, it is a curly-haired spaniel.
Oh, my dear fellow, how can you possibly be so sure of that?
For the very simple reason that I see the dog himself on our very doorstep, and there is the ring of its owner. Now is the dramatic moment of fate, Watson. when you hear a step upon the stair which is walking into your life, and you know not whether for good or ill. What does Dr. James Mortimer, the man of science, ask of Sherlock Holmes, the specialist in crime? Come in.
I am so very glad. I was not sure whether I'd left it here or in the shipping office. I would not lose that stick for the world.
A presentation, I see, from Charing Cross Hospital?
From one or two friends there on the occasion of my marriage.
Dear, dear, that's bad.
Bad? Why was it bad?
Only that you have disarranged our little deductions. Your marriage, you say?
Yes, sir. I married and so left the hospital, and with it all hopes of a consulting practice. It was necessary to make a home of my own.
Come, come, we are not so far wrong after all. And now, Dr. James...
Mr. A humble member of the Royal College of Surgeons.
A man of precise mind, evidently.
A dabbler in science, Mr. Holmes. A picker-up of shells on the shores of the great unknown ocean. I presume that it is Mr. Sherlock Holmes whom I'm addressing, and not...
No, this is my friend, Dr. Watson.
Glad to meet you, sir.
Mr. Mortimer.
I heard your name mentioned in connection with that of your friend. You, Mr. Holmes, interest me very much. I had hardly expected so duly cephalic a skull or such well-marked supraorbital development. Would you have any objection to my running my finger along your parietal fissure?
I presume, sir, that it was not merely for the purpose of examining my skull that you have done me the honour to call here last night and again today.
Oh, no, sir. No, no, no. Though I am happy to have had the opportunity of doing that as well. No, I have in my pocket a manuscript.
I observed it as you entered the room. Early 18th century, unless it is a forgery.
How can you say that, sir?
You have presented an inch or two of it to my examination all the time that you have been talking. I put that at 1730.
But the exact date is 1742. This family paper was committed to my care by Sir Charles Baskerville, whose sudden and tragic death some 3 months ago created so much excitement in Devonshire. He was a strong-minded man, sir. Shrewd, practical, and as unimaginative as I am myself. Yet he took this document very seriously, and his mind was prepared for just such an end as did eventually overtake him.
Oh, it appears to be a statement of some sort.
Yes, it is a statement of a certain legend which runs in the Baskerville family.
But I understand that it is something more modern and practical upon which you wish to consult me.
Most modern. A most practical, pressing matter which must be decided within 24 hours. The manuscript is short, but is intimately connected with the affair. With your permission, I will read it to you. Know, then, that in the time of the Great Rebellion, this manor of Baskerville was held by Hugo of that name, nor can it be gainsaid that he was a most wild, profane, and godless man. It chanced that this Hugo came to love the daughter of a yeoman who held lands near the Baskerville estate. But the young maiden, being of good repute, would ever avoid him, for she feared his evil name. So it came to pass that one Michaelmas, this Hugo, with 5 or 6 of his idle and wicked companions, stole down upon the farm and carried off the maiden, her father and brothers being from home, as he well knew. When they had brought her to the hall, the maiden was placed in an upper chamber, while Hugo and his friends sat down to a long carouse, as was their nightly custom. Now, the poor lass upstairs was like to have her wits turned at the singing and shouting and terrible oaths which came up to her from below. At last, in the stress of her fear, by the aid of the growth of ivy which covered the south wall, she came down from under the eaves and so homeward across the moor, there being 3 leagues betwixt the hall and her father's farm. It chanced that some little time later Hugo left his guests to carry food and drink to his captive, and so found the cage empty and the bird escaped. Everything was now in an uproar, some calling for their pistols, some for their horses, and some for another flask of wine, and then the whole of them, 13 in number, started in pursuit. But soon their skins turned cold, for there came a galloping across the moor Hugo's black mare, dabbled with white froth. It went past with trailing bridle and empty saddle. Then the revellers rode close together, for a great fear was on them. Riding slowly in this fashion, they came at last upon the hounds. These, though known for their valour and breed, were whimpering in a cluster at the head of a deep dip upon the moor, some slinking away and some with starting hackles and staring eyes gazing down the narrow valley before them. It opened out into a broad space in which stood two of those great stones which were set by certain forgotten peoples in the days of old. The moon was shining bright upon the clearing. There in the centre lay the unhappy maid, where she had fallen, dead of fear and of fatigue. Oh, but it was not the sight of her body, nor yet was it that of the body of Hugo Baskerville lying near her, which raised the head upon the heads of these three daredevil roisterers. Standing over Hugo and plucking at his throat, there stood a foul thing. A great black beast, shaped like a hound, yet larger than any hound that ever mortal eye had rested upon. And even as they looked, the thing tore the throat out of Hugo Baskerville, and as it turned its blazing eyes and dripping jaws upon them, the three shrieked with fear and rode for dear life, still screaming across the moor. One, it is said, died that very night of what he had seen, and the other, twain, were but broken men for the rest of their days. Such is the tale of the coming of the hound, which is said to have plagued the family so sorely ever since. Nor can it be denied that many of the family have been unhappy in their deaths, which have been sudden, bloody, and mysterious. Yet may we shelter ourselves in the infinite goodness of Providence, to which I hereby commend you, and I counsel you, by way of caution, to forbear from crossing the moor in those dark hours when the powers of evil are exalted.
The Hound of the Baskervilles by Sir Arthur Conan Doyle.